This is WMUK's West Southwest Brief. I'm Gordon Evans. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research economist Evan Mast says many cities debate large housing projects with prices above the town's average. Mast says one argument against approval may go like this.
Well, these units aren't going to do anything for our housing problem. These are expensive. These are just going to, you know, house rich yuppies. Why do we want to, you know, give up our nice neighborhood for that? And my paper says, well, maybe we shouldn't take that argument as seriously because there are these ripple effects.
Mast is the author of a working paper called The Effect of New Market Rate Construction on the Low-Income Housing Market.
So how can more housing, which maybe even is a little high-priced, or maybe luxury condominiums, help bring down the price for someone who is looking for an affordable place to live?
Yeah, so I always like to explain this just with an example that's, you know, local to wherever I'm talking, wherever the person I'm talking to is from. And in Kalamazoo, we have a couple good examples right now because we have sort of this Exchange Place building, which you might have seen go up. I think it's at like Rose in West Michigan. And then you have this other one at Rose Street in Lovell.
Mast says prices for the new units downtown are well above the average rate found throughout the city of Kalamazoo.
For example, the one at Rose in Lovell, I have two coworkers that looked and saw units there. One would be moving from a little bit cheaper unit downtown. So I think his apartment rents for probably around $1,000. And the other is coming potentially from Portage, and that would be more like a $700 or $800 unit. So if these guys move in to the new building at Rose and Lovell, they're going to leave behind vacancies at their old apartment buildings. Those are going to be at those cheaper price points that I just laid out. And that's going to help to loosen the market, you know, for these units that are in the more typical $700, $900 range.
You described something called Yes in My Backyard. And this would be an example of that, of saying, yes, please come to Kalamazoo, put these apartments downtown. Yes, they're higher priced than maybe a typical person can afford. But by saying yes in my backyard, you're saying that there is some ripple effect.
So, you know, not only do my two coworkers move into the new building and leave behind their slightly cheaper units, you also can imagine that another person moves into the units that are left behind by my old coworkers, and they come from slightly cheaper apartments still. So maybe they move into the $800 apartment from an apartment that costs $600, and then now we've created a vacancy at the $600 price point. You know, these numbers seem small when it's just I'm just talking anecdotally about two coworkers, but you know, I believe these two buildings in downtown Kalamazoo each have about 150 units. So it's about 300 units total that you're creating. And, you know, that can create a substantial number of vacancies once you bring it up to that scale.
In some cities, there would be a requirement that you have to have so many units at a certain point deemed more affordable. Does your research indicate that a policy like that may not loosen the market the way that this example you've spelled out does?
So I think there are trade-offs to putting in those requirements. So these are often called like AROs, affordability requirement ordinances. And it says, okay, if you want to build 200 market rate apartment units, you're going to have to include 20 income restricted units that are going to have to be affordable to someone with the median income for the city maybe, or someone, you know, lower at like the 20th percentile of income. And the benefit to these income-restricted units is that you're sort of offering something that you know exactly the price it's going to rent for. You know exactly the place that it's going to be. It's going to be, you know, in this neighborhood that's maybe desirable for whatever reason that people with these incomes couldn't typically afford. So that's the benefit. The trade-off is that if the developer builds fewer units because they have to meet these affordability requirements, we might not see as many market rate buildings go up. You know, there could be some building where suppose it pencils out, the developer thinks they can make a profit if they don't have to provide any affordable units. But if they have to provide 10% affordable units, maybe that flips the project, it doesn't happen, and now we're out 100 market rate units that otherwise we would have had. And because of this ripple effect mechanism that I just described, losing those market rate units is actually going to have an impact on the lower income housing market because we're not going to create those vacancies that we would have seen if we built those expensive new units.
You do, however, spell out in your report that there are ways that the chain may not make it all the way down to somebody who is in a low-income neighborhood? What are the things that prevent the chain from working as well as it might if it goes perfectly the way you described it earlier?
Yeah, so that's right. Not every new unit is going to create this chain that goes on forever. So you could think of a couple different things that could end this chain. One, which I think is probably less of a problem in Kalamazoo than, say, New York City, is that someone could buy that condo or rent that apartment and use it as just like a second home or a weekend crash pad or some kind of investment property. And then, you know, we're not really creating any more vacancies down the chain because that person's holding on to their main house. They're just using this when they want to, you know, stay in the city for a weekend.
Could happen in a big city. That could also happen maybe in a city which is near, say, Lake Michigan, where people mm-hmm. might think this is my place to get away and be near the lake.
That's right. You know,
for the weekend and maybe for a couple weeks in the summer.
Definitely. Yeah. Also vacation areas for sure.
Does the chain, if it works as well as we hope, does it get down to the person who right now is struggling to find a place that they can afford to rent, even at the lowest rents we have in the city?
So that's a great question. I typically mentioned that earlier because I think that's a really big and important kind of caveat to what I say, is I think this chain mechanism that I describe can definitely help middle-income people, can help working-class people. But if you're looking at the very lowest income where, like you said, you can't really afford even the cheapest apartment that a landlord can offer, the landlord isn't going to take a loss on that property. So we can't really think about lowering the rent for that property because, you know, the landlord's going to pull it off the market if they have to lower the price anymore. So I don't think that the chain is really a great way to target that segment of the market. I think there we need to either think about either subsidies and voucher programs of the kind we have. And another thing that doesn't get talked about very much is you can try to reduce the cost that it takes a landlord to offer housing.
Evan Mast is an economist at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
You can find his working paper on housing and affordability at upjohn.org and also links to his research at wmuk.org. At our website, you can also find the extended version of the interview in WMUK's West Southwest podcast. Evan Mast discusses the policies and economic conditions that could influence whether or not and how soon affordable housing becomes available. The podcast is also available through our app. You can subscribe through Apple Podcasts and by searching podcasts in Google Music. For WMUK, I'm Gordon Evans.